so that you will bless all of the families of the earth. The Hebrew, I love the Hebrew here, says, so be you a blessing. I love that. So be you a blessing. So it seems as the children of God, it seems as the family of God, it seems as the people of God, that we are not mere recipients, but we are participants in blessing. Not just a few, but the whole earth. Henry Nouwen said, we should ask ourselves, where did I bring peace today? What healing words did I speak today? Did I bring a smile to someone's face? Did someone feel valued in my presence? Did I let go of resentment and anger? Did I forgive? How did I love today? And Henry Nouwen said, forget all of the other questions you ask yourself every day. Those are the real questions. Maria Shriver celebrated her mother Eunice, who founded the movement of Special Olympics this past week. She was celebrating her mom. And she said, my mom's philosophy was simple. My mom would say, it boils down to this. Either you live a life serving others, or a life serving yourself. A few years back, I preached a sermon series. Fascinating, of all of the different sermon series I have offered, this particular series received more feedback from you all than anything. And it was on the hard truths. It was facing life's hard truths. And one of those hard truths I suggested is, life is not about you. You know, when they find the center of the universe, there's going to be a lot of people disappointed that it's not them. These hard truths are actually spiritual truths that lead to freedom and joy and health and wholeness. And one of the hard truths, because it's counterintuitive to the way our society is built, is that life is not about us. We are about life. That the world does not exist to serve you and make you happy. Doggone it anyway. We exist to serve the world. Life is not about you. Abraham Lincoln kind of put it this way. He said, it's funny how everybody kind of argues over whether or not God is on their side. Where it seems like a better question, a more humble question is, are you on God's side? It's this incredible idea that God is not the hero of our story. You know, there to meet our every need and to bless us, prosper us with material comfort and wealth. In other words, that maybe as children of God, we are not mere recipients, where God is the hero of our story. What does it mean if we saw ourselves as participants, where we are characters in God's great love story of blessing all the earth? So God doesn't necessarily exist to bless us in the way we think we deserve to be blessed. That's a hard truth. Maybe we're the means, the vehicle, the agents, by and through which God might bless the whole world. Fuad Bonin is a pastor, an Arab pastor in Lebanon. And he told a story in 1983 during the Arab-Israeli war. The Israeli armies drove into Lebanon. And members of Fuad Bonin's Christian church, they went and they bought all of the canned goods, all of the food that they possibly could buy because of a rumored Israeli siege. And lo and behold, it happened. The whole of West Beirut was cut off. So the session of the church, it was a Presbyterian church, the session of the church met to determine how would they distribute the food. Two proposals. One proposal, they'd feed themselves first, then other Christians, and if any food was left, their Muslim neighbors. The second proposal, quite different. They would feed their Muslim neighbors first, then other Christians, and if any was left, they'd feed themselves. Well, it's a Presbyterian church, so this meeting lasted 6 hours. You know, we Presbyterians changing the world one meeting at a time. And it's funny, you know, that fear and that sense of scarcity can have such a tight grip on us that it's hard to let go sometimes. Until one elderly, respected elder got up and she said, "If we do not demonstrate the love of Christ in this place, who will?" Proposal 2, feeding the Muslims' neighbors, passed unanimously. Blessed to be a blessing. You know, today's Bible story is one of our origin stories. It's that story in some ways that I wonder if it sets the trajectory of our faith. So we have the story of Abraham. Abraham lived in the year 1750 BCE. He came from the city of Ur, which is on the banks of the Tigris-Euphrates River, which is just south of present and ancient Baghdad. So essentially, that's where we find Abraham, in Baghdad. Now, archaeological finds tell us a lot about the city of Ur. Archaeological finds tell us that they were incredibly advanced technologically, where there was these canals and ditches and wells for water. Archaeological finds tell us that the city of Ur was incredibly wealthy, where the average home had 13 to 14 rooms. And archaeological finds have also told us that it showed as much educational and cultural sophistication as ancient Egypt. So, God says to Abraham, "Go." And the Hebrew there, by the way, I mean, we read this and we say, "Well, go." But the Hebrew is, "Get off your butt!" You awake now? The actual Hebrew is lech lecha, which means, come on, get going. So God's saying to Abraham, get a move on. Now, what's interesting is for Abraham to go, to leave what it says, to leave his nation, to leave his kindred, to leave his father's house, three things it says that he has to leave. What we realize is it's an incredible sense of sacrifice for Abraham to go. He'd leave behind all that is familiar, all that is secure to him, and go. Go where? God says, go to an unknown land. No GPS. No TripAdvisor. You know, no hotel.com. God says, go, and I will tell you where we're going to go when we get there. Yeah, okay, sure. And then God says, and I will bless you with offspring. No, wait a minute, I'm 75, my wife is barren. Okay, right? And then God says, through you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. Yeah, right, God. What a plan. Go? But here's the deal. Abraham goes. Paul in Romans 4:3 uses Abraham. Abraham is the example of faith. We get nothing from Abraham in terms of theological thought. Nothing in Scripture. Abraham was less than an example of moral virtue, as the stories will unfold. So what's the example of faith? He went. God said go. And he trusted. And what intrigues me about this story is God says to Abraham, you will be blessed. Well, it's puzzling to me because the call to go seems to carry with it an incredible amount of sacrifice and loss and uncertainty. Blessed. But maybe that's the bit we don't understand. Because we think life is about us. That we think blessing is about somehow material comfort or security or power or prosperity coming to us. We hear people say, I'm blessed. And often when they say that, they're referring to the things in their life. Or sometimes we hear people say, I'm blessed, and they refer to their health. Well, what does that mean? The people who aren't healthy? God has chosen not to bless them. They're cut off from God's. That's problematic to me. Or you have two opposing football teams. Happened yesterday. I was watching. Both praying for more touchdowns. That's a problem. Or you have two people of faith praying for that one last parking spot. Maybe when we think about blessing, maybe we misunderstand blessing and we misunderstand God. That maybe the blessing comes when we learn like Abraham, when we learn to live as a child of God and to trust God. Abraham is referred to in the book of Deuteronomy as the people of Israel are about to enter the promised land. They refer to Abraham as our wanderer. Later on in Genesis, Abraham refers to himself, I am a wanderer. Barbara Brown Taylor says, we have lost the spiritual discipline of getting lost. We live in a world right now where we need to know where we're going at all times. We need to schedule absolutely everything. We don't like the idea of ambiguity, uncertainty, of not knowing. And she says it's because we've lost the capacity to trust. And part of getting lost is realizing that I'm not as in control as I thought I was, which is the other hard truth. You are not in control. So maybe the beauty of this story is Abraham learning, and by the way, as we go into the story, he takes two steps forward and four steps back. And that's my learning as well, is this learning to continue to surrender our lives to God and to loosen our grip that's so tight on life from fear and to trust. Because you can't release the blessings of your life, the blessings of love, when you're holding on so tight. Maybe that's the story. What are you holding on to tightly? What are you clutching? What are you grabbing on to that's preventing you from being a blessing to others? That's preventing the love, the hope, the energy of God to flow in and through you. Because out of fear, we're clutching, we're holding, we're trying to be in control, we're seeking safety and security, rather than placing our lives in God's hand. We come to this table today. Viktor Frankl was a prisoner in Nazi Germany. And he observed that some people Some people survived the most harshest, cruelest, most evil circumstances we possibly can think of. He noticed that some people survived the concentration camps. And had nothing to do with age or gender or physical health. What he noticed was those who survived were the ones who took the little bread that they had and they opened their hands and they gave it away. They gave it to the sick, they gave it to the elderly, they gave it to the children. And what he noticed was those who didn't survive were the ones who out of fear hoarded the little they had and kept it for themselves. So the mystery, blessed to be a blessing, is that when we let go, when we release the grip we have on life and trust and see ourselves not just as recipients but participants, we connect ourselves with a love stronger than the worst evil you can imagine. So we come to this table to let go, to surrender, that we might receive the abundant blessings of God's extravagant love revealed in Jesus. That we might release that love. Hear the command of God, go, get off your butt. Go to all the corners of the earth. So that you might be the blessing you were created to be. May it be so. We continue to worship God as the offering is received.